Welcome to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
If you had to lose one of your senses, which one would it be? This is a common hypothetical that gets tossed around. Musicians might say that they can't live without sound. Most people would probably choose smell or touch. I'm not sure I've ever heard anybody pick sight. But although most of us probably dread the idea of losing our sight, very few of us have ever contemplated the full implications of what that loss would involve. One of the most intense and celebrated accounts of what the experience of blindness is really like was written some years ago by John Hull. He was a theologian from Australia originally, who began losing his sight in his mid to late 40s.
It took the form of a dark black disc, which slowly progressed across the field of vision.
He was living in England at the time. It was the early 1980s, and within a few years, he would become completely blind.
Remember that day in Shrewsbury when I caught a glimpse of a...
of the church spire?
Yeah.
I think that's the last thing you ever saw.
That's probably true.
So, Natasha, you went along to this movie, Notes on Blindness, at the Sydney Film Festival that looks at this part of John Hull's story, his entering into a world of blindness.
Yeah, the movie is based on these tapes, actually, that John made during this transition period, the years where he's losing his sight and, you know, learning to live with his blindness. And he started recording an audio diary of the experience. It was kind of his way of accepting his blindness as his reality. So he said, I had to think about blindness because if I didn't understand it, it would defeat me. And the tapes are kind of his coping mechanism, how he processes what's happening to him.
So what you hear in the film is actually him, the tapes of him speaking.
Exactly. So the actors are lip syncing the whole time. And the voices that you hear are the actual voices of John and his family. So the filmmakers used these old tapes, these old cassettes from the 80s, as well as more recent interviews with John and his wife Marilyn, to piece together this insider's sense of what it was like for him to lose his sight. So you get to hear Marilyn talk very openly about her fears.
I think this idea of you going away into another world where I couldn't be was... That was awful, that was... Shall I scratch my eyes out? Shall I come with you into this world?
And you hear their children trying to figure out what it means that their dad can't see.
I am reminded of being in Wales with Imogen when she said to me, Daddy, if I cried and my tears fell on your eyes, would you be able to see again?
And then, of course, there's John Hull himself.
How could this happen to me? Who had the right to deprive me of the sight of my children at Christmas time?
Seems like a strange choice to make a film, which is obviously such a visual form, about the experience of losing your sight.
I thought that too. And I mean, it is a very unusual film. At the same time, you kind of share in and you don't share in John's loss of vision. And then this focus on what it means day to day to learn to do without seeing. It just made me appreciate the beauty of the film all the more. Like, it made me really hungry for the visuals. It made me really appreciate my sight. So the filmmakers do make the most of this split between film as a visual experience and what John is going through.
For us, we very much saw this as a kind of a challenge, really, and worked very closely with our cinematographer to try and find an aesthetic that could sort of suggest something of the experience of blindness. And actually, we found it incredibly kind of liberating when we sort of embraced this restriction. Of course, the film is so much about, is so visually centric, so much about eye lines and sort of spatial geography and so forth.
This is Peter Middleton. He wrote and directed Notes on Blindness, and he's describing the creative process of developing a style of filmmaking that can deal with blindness.
And so we developed a style whereby we would try and suggest something of John's kind of reduced world of blindness. We'd try and close down the space. We'd, using light and shadow, we'd never give the audience a sort of privileged perspective of the scene. We'd try and never show any kind of clean wide shots. The framing of characters, of supporting characters, became sort of central, really. So particularly in regards to John's family, to his young children, we'd be framing characters beneath the eyes to try and echo something of what John described as the sort of recession of visual memory, really, when he first lost his sight.
After nearly 3 years of blindness, I find that the pictures in the gallery of my mind have dimmed somewhat. So I found with great distress that I could no longer remember easily what my wife looked like or what my daughter Imogen looked like.
So in what form did you first come across John Hull's story?
Myself and my co-director James Spinney were researching various first-person testimonies of blindness, and we came across John's book, Touching the Rock, which was published in the early 1990s. It's very, very well regarded as one of the kind of the key subjective accounts of the blind experience, and people like Oliver Sacks had written quite extensively about John's experience and taken a great interest in his story. It takes us on a journey that begins as sort of loss and grief and becomes one of kind of rebirth and renewal. And by the end of the story, John has come to see blindness as this kind of almost dark paradoxical gift, as he describes it, that gives him a kind of new way of being in the world. We were drawn very much to his writing, and in the foreword to the book it mentioned that it was based on these cassettes that John had recorded, and we knew that if those cassettes were still in existence, it would make incredibly compelling material on which to base a film. So we reached out to him, and after a few months of getting to know him, he sort of sent us this box of dusty C90 cassettes that had never really been heard before in public, and had been sort of lying undisturbed on a shelf in his office, just gathering dust for the best part of 3 decades.
This is cassette one, track one, Notes on Blindness, and this is the 21st of June, 1983.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity, and we're listening to Natasha's interview with filmmaker Peter Middleton about the life of John Hull stepping into his world of blindness.
John's experience for the first couple of years of blindness was very much a practical one, actually. When he first lost his sight, he was concerned with how to maintain his life, really. He'd just had a son. Within the same week that he lost his sight, he was registered blind. So it was an incredibly hectic period for him. He was an academic. He was a teacher at the university. So within a couple of weeks, the students would be coming back. And of course, he had years and years of research and academic notes that were now suddenly inaccessible to him. And so he needed to find a way of kind of dealing with these very practical challenges, actually. And so he said that the first 2 years of blindness were sort of characterized by confronting these practical challenges, learning how to cross roads, how to, you know, cope with in social situations, as well as, of course, how to maintain his livelihood.
The only thing I was interested in was how to function as a blind academic. I needed to have serious books recorded sensibly. All that was basically available in the United Kingdom was detective novels and romantic fiction.
It wasn't really until 1983 that he felt he'd learnt how to cope. He began to feel that he needed to really understand and interrogate blindness to be able to try and find a new kind of relationship with it in many respects. And that's when he began keeping the audio diaries and began recording his thoughts and sort of excavating the experience of blindness. What began as a kind of cathartic process, he said that he would share with the tapes what he didn't want to burden his family with, actually. And through that process, that's what led him to drilling deeper and deeper into the blind experience, and to be able to document and to chart this kind of neurological rewiring which he underwent, that eventually led to a discovery of a world beyond sight, as he referred to it, as a reconceptualizing of blindness. it gave him a new way of being in the world, that he needed to live wholly in blindness and not be, as he said, a sort of a blind person with a sighted person's brain, but live wholly in blindness and face the reality of it.
So do you think there's some kind of moral weight to that process of kind of sighted people going on this journey?
One of John's big key kind of ambitions, really, of sharing his experience of blindness was to communicate something of his experience with sighted people, to try and help people understand it and understand what the experience was like for him. He never claimed to speak on behalf of the wider blind community, but felt that through sharing his experience, it may well have some benefits to other people. And so that's very much one of our key ambitions with the film, was to become an extension of John's project, really, to try and articulate his experience to all audiences.
How can blind and sighted people truly understand each other? How can men understand women? How can the rich understand the poor? How can the old understand the young? Can we have insight into other people? This is the great question upon which the unity of our humanity hangs.
In the early years of blindness, he did describe it as a religious crisis. Not so much in that he felt that sort of why him question. His relationship with God wasn't that kind of relationship, but it was more that he said he felt that he didn't really feel the kind of calm acquiescence and acceptance that you're supposed to feel in living the trusted life of faith, as he said. That was deeply concerning for him, deeply troubling for him, and it's something that is explored throughout the film to some degree, particularly often through the relationship with his youngest son Thomas, actually, who's sort of typical toddler fashion is probing these kind of questions and asking John why doesn't God help you and why doesn't God give you your sight back and all these things. It allows John to kind of explore his relationship with faith.
Why doesn't God help you? God does help me in lots of ways. How? Well, he makes me strong and gives me courage. But he doesn't help you to get your eyes back.
John does come to consider blindness as a gift. He described it as a terrible gift, not a gift that he wanted his family necessarily to have, and not a gift that he wanted. And it's this kind of notion of blindness as a gift is quite a complex one. I think what John meant by it was that the experience of blindness for him was also an experience of vulnerability. And it really caused a sort of a realignment with his sense of identity, really. And so the experience for him enabled him really to empathise with people who'd also experienced suffering. And that, for him, was a profound gift.
Does that mean, you know, in your observation of John and his wife now, or in recent years, that he had kind of made peace with that, and that wasn't kind of an ongoing battle and pain for him?
Yeah, it's interesting watching the film now, particularly with John's family. Of course, the film actually only focused on 5 years of his life from the early 1980s. And although it was an incredibly important period, this kind of period of adjusting to sight loss, he was always very keen that blindness didn't define him. In fact, he'd refer to blindness quite often as his hobby. You know, John was an incredibly intelligent and articulate guy and had a broad range of interests. And so he didn't look back, and of course there was times when the blindness was a source of a continuing source of pain for him. I think particularly when his grandchildren were born, that reopened some of those thoughts. But on the whole, as is shown in the film, the place where we leave him in the film was this discovery of a new world, really, a new way of living in the world, and certainly a kind of a peace that he'd found with blindness. And that characterised, yeah, his remaining 3 decades, really, of his life.
You've been listening to Life and Faith in the Centre for Public Christianity. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation with documentary filmmaker Peter Middleton about his latest film, Notes on Blindness, that showed at this year's Sydney Film Festival.
If you're after more conversations like this, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us. Next week, do good things happen to good people? Join us then.